So how often would you say our parents are the reason we need counseling? Is that...
Yes.
Today, I'm joined by some of the staff from Grace Counseling to give you a rare peek into the world of therapy. I had to ask them, what are signs you or someone you love might need to see a counselor? And along the way, they share the number one biggest myth about counseling. It may not be what you think. I'm Jean Harrison, and this is Grace After Hours. So how often would you say our parents are the reason we need counseling? Is that...
Yes.
I mean, as a parent, really? Yes, I know.
Really?
I know.
90%, 95% is your parents?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We are the one... Do you feel like it goes back to the family a lot?
And it should.
It should.
Yeah, every time, like, coming to counseling, like, there are pieces that were the most formative. Those were the pieces that, you know, helped shaped the neural biological connections in your brain to figure out, is this a response that is requires a fight or flight response? Am I being triggered? What are my emotions here? How would those soothe? I mean, just the way our brain gets mapped out as a child. Mm-hmm. I mean, your parents are involved in that. Like, it goes back to the family.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Counseling and therapy, is there a difference between those two words even? I feel like I just use them interchangeably. There's a difference?
No, I was
you would
nodding
use them
to
interchangeably.
Yeah.
Well, I just think there's more weight, I think, when you use the word therapy.
Yeah.
And counseling, it kind of like brings it a little bit kind of softer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't know. We were actually talking about this. We were like, is there a difference between those two words? I was like, oh, I don't know. Good thing I have a room full of counselors coming in. I asked them my question. I think that the average person probably at some point has thought to themselves, like, do I need therapy? Am I crazy? Like, I know before I started seeing a counselor, many times I would think, like, is this normal? Like, this amount of conflict in a marriage or this amount of rage? Like, how much anger is normal and how much is, like, you need professional help? And nobody's a fly on someone else's wall to know, like, what is normal? Are there signs that, like, I need help. This is past the level of just chat with a friend. I need to see a therapist. Well, what do you think, Jessica?
I think if you notice it's kind of spilling over into more than one, like, relationship dynamic, like, oh, okay, I feel angry, like, anger, right? I feel angry, like, with my husband, with my friend, my mom is annoying me. And then it's like, okay, well, this is a bunch of different people and I am the constant in all of these situations. Maybe I should go, like, talk to someone about, like, why I constantly feel this way. Different environment settings, different relationship dynamics.
Interesting. So if it spills into more areas, any other signs you think that I need therapy?
I think in some sense, if you find yourself in the same position over and over again, having the same reaction, having the same kind of negative feeling, patterns of, like, you know, this is the same problem I had with my old job, or this is the same problem I had with my old relationship. And I'm just seeing these things still come up. And that might be a sign of, all right, we can kind of go in a little bit further by looking at what is that thing that keeps on coming up that you can change your circumstances, right? But you are the common denominator.
You're always in that, maybe it. Like even relationships, like you keep dating the same person or the same. What about maybe signs that someone I love needs counseling?
I think with that, the best thing to do is to go to counseling yourself.
Even if you think it's my husband who needs to really be in therapy?
Yeah, there's something about kind of the buy-in of, like, wanting it and going there for yourself that makes it definitely affects the impact. It has a bigger impact. And so instead of trying to convince someone else that they need it or this is their next step, one way to encourage them is to just kind of model that yourself and to go yourself and experience it yourself. And we know from family systems theory, like, one person in the family system affects the entire system. So if one person does something different, it affects every other person in that family system. The system cannot stay the same if one thing changes.
So would you say, Julie, that you should never say to someone, like, if I were to say to my husband, I think you need therapy, is that not, like, a good idea to do?
I mean, you could say that, but I don't know if it would be as well received as something along the lines of, I'm really struggling with how to handle these interactions that we're having or this conflict that we're having. And so I'm going to go talk to someone about it and see if I can change the way that I engage and that I interact, knowing that there's going to be a ripple effect from that. The system can't stay the same if one person changes.
I think that's really encouraging. I've never heard that before, that if one person changes, it will affect the entire system. So you could be the first person to take that step and say, hey, I'm going if you want to come. Do you feel like, Ethan, it's harder for men sometimes? I feel this is anecdotal. I've never researched this, but I feel like talking to my girlfriends, it seems often like women are more open to the idea of therapy than men. Do you think that's a thing or not necessarily? I'm just curious why it's hard for men, some men.
I know, I do think it's a thing.
You do.
And I think women will naturally kind of see the value in getting with other friends and talking.
Yes.
Talking just through what happened, talking through their emotions, talking through whatever problem they're facing. And that is not typically the inclination that I see most men have. It's let's go do something. Let's go solve something, fix something, have some shared common interest. And just the way that I think men relate to other men in a masculine ways, right, in normal ways, that they don't really put forward so much of the value on, this is something I'm really struggling with. I just wanted this to have space to air out.
Yeah.
And that be it.
Do you take a different approach with women versus men when you talk to them?
Absolutely. I mean, it's with every single client. And it's always, I always find it really interesting to see how women will respond to a male counselor and what kind of dynamics in play. Because, I mean, really, we all have wounds from different people that we've had relationships with.
Right.
And so, and I step into a counseling room with particularly a male or female, I'm going to try to be as aware as possible of, you know, did someone like me fit my demographic, fit my category, do some type of wounding to this person that I need to particularly be aware of and speak to.
If we all have wounds, which I think you're absolutely right, every single person, I know you specialize in trauma some, I know y'all do slightly different things, we all have wounds, why do you think it's not more normal? Why do you think counseling is so stigmatized? And I should say, I feel like here, you all work at Grace Counseling. I feel like our church does a really good job of normalizing it, but it's not that way in a lot of the world. Why do you think it's not more normal?
Because the biggest misconception, I think, about counseling and therapy is that something has to be wrong with you to go.
Yes.
Right? And so by saying, hey, I'm going to counseling, it puts that idea in people's mind of like, oh, something's going on with her. Something's wrong in her house, you know? Instead, that is not the case at all. You can be a well-functioning, like a good employee, a great mom, a great wife, a great daughter, and just be like, hey, I just need like a checkup. I just kind of want to like have an objective soundboard for some of this stuff that I've got, you know, thinking about or I've got going on at home or whatever. And be more proactive instead of reactive to things that are going on.
I think therapy is often most beneficial when you're not in crisis, because then you're really able to go in and kind of dig deep and kind of bring up some of those things, like those patterns that you're seeing or those relationship overlaps. And you have the space to process them. You're not trying to put out fires. You're able to just really understand your story better and understand yourself.
Which you, Ethan and I were talking a little bit earlier about how there's like two branches almost of therapy. There's the crisis and non. How do you approach those differently? If someone comes in and, you know, what's the difference?
Yeah. When I think of crisis counseling and just maybe more typical counseling, I think of kind of like, what is their homeostasis, right? And if they're coming in crisis, they're probably below that, right?
What do you mean by homeostasis?
Like, what does normal functioning look like for you?
Okay.
Like, what is day-to-day functioning, going to work or taking care of kids or
so if they're crisis baseline,
their baseline. And so when they're in crisis, they're usually, we want to get them up to that regular, like, all right, you're functioning, you're going throughout your day, you're okay, and there's not any kind of major catastrophes happening in this day. And if those people who are kind of at that baseline homeostasis level, then counseling can turn into, all right, what is there that you feel like you can improve upon? What is there that you want to see change in?
So you kind of take like a gauge of where they actually are to decide where, Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, what about, let me ask you this. You're the only person here who sees kids. Mm-hmm. What are signs? Because I feel like if you talk about just kids being dysregulated, I feel like that's just like Tuesday. Like, you know what I mean? Like pitching yeah. a fit, tantrums. Like, yeah. And I have looked at some of them. I have four children and been like, do we need counseling? Like, what are mm-hmm. signs in a kid that, no, this is just developmentally normal? Or like, oh, I need help beyond just, you know, me and my husband.
Yeah. So that's a good question, because at the end of the day, like, I have a 4-year-old. So at the end of the day, she's still going to be four. Right. Which means right. she's not going to want to eat broccoli for dinner. And right. she's going to tell me that's dumb and like all that stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, so that's very typical 4-year-old behavior. Right. Yes. So if you're seeing dysregulation at home, you're getting feedback from the teacher that she's noticing or he's noticing dysregulation in class, or like
anxiety,
or like issues with peers, or like, hey, like I've noticed like a change in her peer dynamic, or you know, the same group that she used to eat lunch with, they don't eat lunch with her anymore and she's kind of by herself. Like a lot of feedback from the teacher and the parents, or like a coach, like, and then if they're like in a sport or an extracurricular activity and you're also getting that feedback from that person as well, that would be an indicator of like, okay, maybe we need to go talk this out with someone.
So what might it look like if we demystify it a little, taking a child to therapy? Like, is there play therapy? What is that experience even like?
Yeah, so there is play therapy, and we do play therapy at Grace Counseling. And typically that's for 6 to maybe like 10, 11, some 12-year-olds.
Okay.
And so we have a play therapy room, which to a kid looks great because it's just yes. full of Legos and Play-Doh and dollhouses and toys. And I'm sure the parents walk in and they're like, cool, paying for like a play date, you know? But that's not the case. Everything in there is very intentional. Play therapy. So kids' language is play. So I cannot sit down across from a 6-year-old and be like, so I heard that I heard you have no friends. Tell me how that makes you feel, you know? Yeah. And they're going to be like, they don't have language for that. Mm. So their language is play. And so what we do is child-led, you know, play therapy. And so we kind of narrate their play, watch their play, interact with them. Maybe if I know like, okay, they're having like peer issues at school, we'll kind of like act that out in like the dollhouse or whatever. Right. Yes. So that's kind of what that looks like. I'm the kid. I warn the parents that your child is going to go home and tell you, we played all day and played games. I'm here to tell you. Yeah. I'm here to tell you. That is true. Like, we did do that, but it's all very intentional. And I'm getting to see, how do they relate to another person? How do they relate to an adult? What is that? Mm. What does that look like? We're observing a lot of things through play therapy.
Right. Yeah. You've worked some with adolescents, so a little different than play therapy. How would you approach a teenager coming in to meet with you?
Yeah, at that point, it can be talk therapy.
Right.
And at that point, they're still in their family system.
Yeah.
Right. So there is a unique balance of, okay, let me figure out what independence and growth looks like for you when you don't have all the independence.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And to navigate more specific and behavioral things that associated with their goals of maybe academics or sports, or whatever it is that even the parent is concerned about where their growth should be, is to address those type of things.
Hmm. Have you ever been in a situation where someone brought in an adolescent and they're kind of like, fix them, do these things, and then as you get into it, you're like, ooh, I think you're the problem. The adult is the problem.
I've had that problem a little bit.
I would imagine. This is actually what got me in therapy the very first time, was issue with my daughter that I felt like it was making me respond in a way that I was like, I don't like who I am. Like the amount of anger coming out and the amount it was triggering me. And I just felt, and actually I did cry so hard the day I decided to call a counselor. This was before Grace Counseling even existed. But I remember in therapy later, she asked me, why did you cry when you decided to call? And I said, because I feel like something's really wrong. Like, if I can't fix this myself, then like, I've really failed. I've really messed up. And she said, if you imagine your expectation was like, good parents can do this by themselves, and the reality is, no, you need help. She said, the gap between your expectation and your reality is grief. That's what you're grieving. Mm-hmm. But she said, but is that a right expectation that a good mom doesn't need? But, you know, my parents, like, that generation, they didn't do therapy. They, like, you know what I mean? I felt embarrassed to even say, like, well, mom and dad, I'm signing us up for counseling. But then even then, one thing I appreciated is the counselor told me, you know, up front with kids, we recommend 4 to 6 sessions in a row. You'll see the biggest result if it's like back to back. And it suddenly felt feasible. I think I thought, I can't pay for this forever. But like you said, we do budget for sports. We budget. So I told my husband, okay, this is how much 6 sessions costs. We can budget for it. And I can reassess after that point. I think that's, to me, one of the misconceptions too, is like, I'm going to have to do this once a week forever, and I maybe can't afford that. But don't you, counseling can be for a season and then you back off some, right? It's not always like, or do you feel that you normally see patients forever?
Yeah. Depends. Yeah. Definitely depends. Varies client to client, right? And like what the client comes in with needing and things like that. But that is a possibility, yes, that someone could come in for a season and then kind of back off.
And then when they need you, kind of pop, almost like you would see a doctor. Like,
right. Yeah. I'm almost getting like this car mechanic, and maybe it's because I've recently had car trouble, sort of mentality. If your car broke down, you wouldn't think twice about going to the mechanic who knows cars to help you fix it.
Right.
But then there's also this element of, you know, you taking your car in for to get the maintenance, to tune up. Yes. Like you do things with your car regularly so that either hopefully they'll catch something if there's something really wrong. Like if your fluid's down, they'll be able to fill that up. So then you don't end up breaking your engine or something like that. So having maybe a little bit of both, like you have this established relationship with someone when things are going pretty well, so that you have a kind of a homeostasis baseline that you're aware of, you know, this is how I'm functioning when things are really good. And maybe even going to therapy then helps me elevate that. So I'm operating in an even kind of better mindset, a healthier state. And then you have a place to go when your car breaks down, you know, you have a mechanic that you trust that you can bring this car to, so that they
which
can help
you. Which is kind
you.
Of how I do hand, like when COVID happened, I was like, we're going to book a session. You know, like it's like, but they know my history. Right. They know all. Have you ever hit a place where counseling didn't fix it? Have you ever had a problem or encountered an issue with a client where you didn't see counseling making a big difference, or it felt not fixable?
I think, speaking of working with kids, there are, so there's a lot of specialists and interventions with children. And so something that I have seen is, you know, we get to a certain point where I've recommended, you know, I think occupational therapy would be like the next best step for you. So not necessarily that counseling didn't make a difference, but just kind of, this is now maybe out of my scope, right? Like I'm not an occupational therapist. I don't do the things that they do. And that they are the professionals that would handle these specific needs moving forward.
Yeah, I've had an experience where I basically came to kind of like a crux, like this kind of crossway in the road of with a client where I was trying to help them as much as I can, but saying to a certain point, you're going to need to decide. There's going to be a certain decision that you're going to have to figure out your beliefs and your values and figure out how you can make the next step in alignment with that. And I can sit with you and talk to you and figure that out. This is something you can also explore with your own beliefs and go to a church or go to wherever kind of religious affiliation that this person has. And it was particularly did go down to a kind of a religious spirituality belief thing that was like, you're going to want to figure this out because that's really going to shape and determine what you think the right step is going to be. And this is where counseling can take you so far.
Yeah. You mentioned faith-based counseling. How is that unique to traditional counseling?
I mean, it's unique in that, like, we've prayed over our offices before we opened our doors. Like, we believe that the Lord is over this counseling center, and he has brought specific people there with specific purpose. We believe in the Holy Spirit working and changing hearts. But it is also just being present with our clients and where they're at. So at no point are we kind of pushing an agenda or our own beliefs or something on a client unless they bring it up. So we are waiting. Everyone has a value system. Everyone has morals. Everyone has these existential questions that they wrestle with and are looking for ways to answer those things. So you know, we can sit with them in that and walk with them through that, even without imposing our own beliefs. But at the end of the day, I mean, we all wrestle with the same existential questions.
Totally. Okay, real quick before we jump into some rapid fire for fun questions, how do you get the most out of a session? Let's say I'm getting ready for my first therapy session. Any quick, just this is what to do? Should I come with a list of questions? I kind of always wonder that because I'm thinking I'm paying like so much money. Should I be, should I come buck. Like, do you know what I mean? What do you think? Or do you just show up and you guys will take the reins?
I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to come with a list of questions. I mean, you might come with five things and we may get to just like half of one, you know? So I think managing that expectation of like, you can come with a list, we might not get to it. But I don't think that's a bad thing to like know, okay, I know that I'm here for X, right? Like I know I'm here for anxiety or whatever and being ready to talk about those things. I don't think that's a bad thing at
all. But I think what that shows is this desire to know your story and know yourself. So if you're coming in with questions, what we're really seeing is that I'm here to really take a look at my life and my story and I want to understand it better. And so I think if you're preparing to go to counseling or you're about to make that phone call or send that email and schedule a session, really just giving yourself some space and time to think through, like, who am I? What have my experiences been? Why do I do the things that I do? What do I want to look differently? How do I want to interact differently with the people around me? How has my story maybe affected the things that I do now? How will it continue to affect me in the future? So to really be thinking through some of those things kind of like sets that posture of openness and curiosity.
Yes.
And that is a game changer for counseling.
That posture of open and curious. I think for me, the biggest hindrances in my mind were the time, the investment, the money, but also just like, I don't want to stir up all this junk in my life. Like I you know, when you clean out a closet, it's like it gets worse before it gets better. I was like, I don't want to take all this stuff out. And then like, oh, where am I going to put it all? Like, and actually for me, the very first time I went, I felt like, it was so normalizing. My counselor just made me feel not judged. It's okay to feel all that. I thought her jaw would drop like, what? And it was like, no. And I just felt like this exhale, like this is a safe place. I just talked to a guy recently who he was in crisis. He was going through a divorce. And so he got counseling and he made the comment that he was like, my gosh, why don't we do this in high school? Like, why is this not a required course that, you know, you think about all the stuff we teach the kids, like, who cares about George Washington? Like, let's have a required course. Like, at least when you're a senior, do 6 weeks of like tools, understand yourself. I think it's very beneficial. You don't have to be crazy to do it. So I really appreciate you guys sharing all this insight. You ready for your rapid fire fun questions?
Maybe.
Okay. This was my favorite one the guys came up. But which supervillain are you most sympathetic toward as a therapist? Supervillain.
The Cruella.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, Cruella.
The live action one?
The live action Cruella. I was like, supervillain. Trauma. I'm like,
I can see why.
Yes. Okay. Anybody else supervillain?
Yes.
You're sympathetic toward? Are you not a Marvel, DC kind of a person?
Well, I think in a general sense, they've done an amazing job humanizing every single villain.
Yes.
Nothing comes to mind.
Okay. One special toy you had as a kid. Do you have a memory of like favorite object?
Pikachu. 100%. Big stuffed Pikachu. A lot of Pikachus, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Pikachu collection.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have the cards too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the forms.
He's like, duh.
Yeah.
Did you play Pokemon Go?
I did. Yes. It's great for your mental health.
Is it?
You get outside, especially during COVID.
Perfect. Coping skill.
Outside
was the only place you could go. It was like a movement of it for a season. It was like everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Any favorite toys? Anybody?
My dolls. I mean.
Yeah.
I was a big American Girl doll fan. Barbies.
Do you analyze everybody you sit down with? Yes or no?
Yeah. This is the biggest question I get asked. I tell people. I tell people I'm like a therapist. They're like, are you analyzing me right now? When you watch a movie, are you like analyzing the characters? I'm like, no.
No.
I also like to sit and enjoy like a nice.
Oh, see, I can't.
A nice movie, you know. But sometimes people, when people ask me like, oh, what'd you think of such and such movie? It's like, do I answer as like my therapist opinions or like Jessica's opinions. Yeah.
I have a hard time watching comedians because I'm just like, oh, it's just all your trauma. You're just covering it all. You're just coping with the humor. It's funny, but like I can't get past.
I couldn't see that because sometimes what they say is dark and sad. Yes, dark. And you're like, is it true that people who make a lot of jokes are hiding something a lot of times or have a lot of
coping skill?
Yeah.
It is. Is it? Okay. It's Starbucks order? Anybody? Your first favorite Starbucks order?
Oh, right now, currently?
Yeah.
Pumpkin spice chai tea latte.
I heard it was amazing.
Delicious.
My sister, my daughter just got that. Yes. She's like, Mom, so good.
Oh,
my
goodness.
So good. Favorite Starbucks? No.
I switch around with teas at Starbucks. So.
You do teas always?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't drink coffee.
Okay. If you could recommend one book, everybody should read this book. What's your book recommendation? Mm-hmm. Or it could just be one you're reading right now that you would recommend.
I'm really enjoying Emotionally Healthy Spirituality.
Okay.
It's a good book. Mm-hmm. Body Keeps the Score.
Whole Brain Child.
Whole Brain Child.
Mm-hmm. Whole Brain Child for parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Going Through Anatomy of the Soul by Kurt Thompson.
Ooh.
Ooh, Kurt Thompson. Mm.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, thank you guys so much. I sure appreciate you sitting down with me.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Grace After Hours is a production of Grace Church in Orlando, Florida. Grace's mission is helping people take the next step toward Christ. Learn more at discovergrace.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, share it with someone you know and subscribe so you never miss an episode.